Mesach's Ous Pardalmish Yud Basin till Pardalmish and Tesvo. Rebelosben Shamua, Imer, Rebelosben Shamua says, Yihichavay Talmidcha Chavivalecha Keshalach. The honor and dignity of your student, that the one who learns Torah from you, should be as beloved and dear to you like your own honor. As much as you care about your own honor and dignity, that is how much you should care about your student's dignity, even though he is on a lower level than you. Chvod Chavayach Kmei Rabach, and the honor of your friend, who is on the same level, Kmo Rabach, should be like the fear which you have towards your teacher, who is on a higher level. Umo Rabach, and the fear, the awe that one feels towards his teacher, Kmo Shamayim, should be like the awe which he feels towards Hashem. And the Medrash Shmuel explains that in general, naturally, we tend to not honor people as much as we should. And certainly we care about our own honor more than others. And because of that, the Mishnah is telling us to always try and aim for a higher level of honor than that which is really due to the person. And that way, at least in practice, you'll end up honoring him like you should. Now, the language used by the Mishnah is that the honor of your student should be as dear and as beloved upon you like your own honor. And the honor of your friend should be like the honor of your teacher, and your teacher should be like Hashem. On a practical level, when it comes to honoring these people, halachically speaking, there's a difference. And one is not obligated to honor everybody on the same level. And the honor which one gives towards his teacher must be more than the honor which he gives to his friend. The main point of the Mishnah, however, is that the honor which you give to others should be as dear as your own honor or the honor of your teacher, etc. The amount that you care and feel for other people's honor should be the same as your honor and your teacher's, etc. Mishnah Yud Gimel, Rabbi Yehuda says, there is Zohar Talmud, one should be careful when learning Gemara, when learning Torah, and all of the various concepts of Torah, Sheshigigas Talmud Ola Zadain, because a mistake in learning, for example, if somebody ends up making a halachic ruling which is mistaken, it is considered to be as if it was done on purpose. Why on earth would this be? So one explanation is given by the Meiri, who says that we're talking about a case where somebody is asked a halachic question and it's quite urgent, so it doesn't have enough time to check up the halacha in different sfarim, whatever it may be. And so he gives the ruling from what he thinks that it is. And it ends up being it's a mistake. The reason why he is to be blamed for this is because he should have known his learning so well that he wouldn't need to check up it in the sfarim. One needs to make sure that he reviews his learning enough that he'll know it, and it will be in his head. And that's why this mistake is really his fault. That's one explanation. A different explanation given by the Maharal, though we're not talking about a specific case like the Meiri, but he explains it like the simple understanding of the Mishnah, that any time you make a mistake in learning, it's as if you did it on purpose. And he explains via a moshel. He says, imagine you have a man walking through the forest and it's the middle of the night. There are no lights around in any near distance. And it's totally pitch black, but he needs to get somewhere as soon as possible to his destination. So he carries on walking even though it's pitch black in the middle of the night. And he's walking in the middle of this forest, and suddenly he trips and he falls down. And as he's falling, he hears a tremendous smash. And he figures that the thing that he tripped on was something which could smash. Either way, he can't really move properly. He's certainly not in the mood to carry on his walk, and so he lies down there and falls asleep until the morning. In the morning, he wakes up, ready to carry on his walk, and he looks around him and he sees many, many small pieces of smashed glass of all different colors, and he figures that it must have been some beautiful glass structure or something made out of glass. It was probably worth a lot of money. And he sighs, realizing that this was worth a lot of money, and he was the one who smashed it. But of course, in this situation, nobody doubts the fact that it was totally out of his control, and it was a mistake. Of course, he is not blamed, and he can't blame himself for having smashed that glass structure, whatever it was. But now let's imagine that this man carries on his walk the next day, and this time he managed to find a lamp. And he's walking through the forest with a lamp, which lights up his way, and he can see all around him, and exactly the same thing happens. He trips on something made out of glass, or a different beautiful structure, because he didn't see it, and he falls down, and he breaks that expensive item, whatever it was. Over here, he can be blamed. It's true that, practically speaking, he didn't actually see that expensive item, and that's why he tripped on it. And yeah, it was a mistake, but can we blame him for it? Of course we can blame him for it. He had a lamp in his hand. It's as if he's walking in the middle of the day. He needs to be looking where he's going. In a similar vein, explains the Maharal, when somebody has the Torah in his hands, the Torah is the light of everything. The Torah is true, absolute truth, And if somebody applies himself enough to what he is learning, he will reach the absolute truth. Torah is something that when you learn it, you can know that what I am learning right now is absolute 100% MS. It's absolute truth. And I'm just trying to delve into it and to understand it. And if one applies himself enough, then he will definitely come to the correct ruling. And if somebody ends up with the wrong, warped ruling, then it's because he didn't apply himself enough and he didn't use that lamp enough in order to get to the truth. Right, continues the Mishnah. Rabbi Shimon says, Shalosh Ksarim Haim, there are three crowns. Three types of qualities, which if somebody possesses one of these qualities, he is deserving of extra honor. Firstly, Keser Torah, the crown of Torah, the Keser Kahuna. Secondly, the crown of Kahuna, the Kohanim who serve in the Beis HaMikdash and have an extra level of sanctity. And thirdly, the Keser Malchus, the crown of being a king. There's an obligation to honor a king. Now, two out of three of these crowns are not available for anybody. Kahuna, of course, if you were born a Kohen, then you have the crown of Kahuna. If not, then you don't. And the same goes for a king. One can't choose and decide to be a king and to gain that crown. However, like the Rambam beautifully says on this Mishnah and elsewhere, when it comes to the crown of Torah, kol ha'reitze litol yovei v'yitol. And the source for this is even earlier than the Rambam. The Ovester Rabbi Nosson already says it. The Ovester Rabbi Nosson is sort of the collection of statements said by Tanoim regarding the Mishnayos of Perkei Avos. So already over there is found this expression of kol ha'reitze litol yovei v'yitol. Anybody who wants the Torah, the crown of Torah, should come and get it. It's not so simple, and it's not so easy. It requires pursuing it like nothing else exists. It requires losing hours of sleep. But if somebody truly wants the crown of Torah, and to become great in Torah and a Talmud Chacham, the crown of Torah is waiting for him to grab it. And the Rambam adds that the crown of Torah is greater than the crown of Kahuna and the crown of Malchus. In fact, it's pretty much explicit in one of the Mishnayos later on in this Masechta, in the final Perek, that Torah is indeed greater than Kohanah and Malchus, and this is the crown which is available for anybody to take. And now, interestingly, the Mishnah adds on, the Keser Sheng Toiv Oile Al Gabehen. The crown of a good name rises above them, and it's considered to be even greater than these three crowns. Now, something doesn't really make sense in this Mishnah, because Rabbi Shimon began by saying that there are three crowns, and now he's talking about a fourth crown being greater. But I don't understand that there are only three crowns. And secondly, what exactly is the crown of having a good name? The Bartanura explains that the crown of a good name means that somebody has this good name as a result of his good actions, being an upright person, somebody who people look up to as an example for how he acts. And it's not considered to be a separate crown. Rather, all three of the above the aforementioned crowns are only worth honoring at all if they have a good name. If the Talmud Chacham who knows lots of Torah has a great character, and people look up to him as an example for how he acts, so then he really does have the crown of Torah and it's worth honoring him. And the same goes for the other two crowns. So this fourth crown is sort of the, you could call it the top of the crown or the bottom of the crown. It's a part of one of these three crowns which is necessary, and is considered to be the most significant part of the crown, so to speak, because the crown is only worth anything if it includes this. Mishnah Yudalit, Rabbi Nehirai says, Rabbi Nehirai is another name for Meir, according to most. Alternatively, it's another name for Rabbi Nechemya or Rabbi Loza ben Arach, but according to most, Rabbi Nehirai is Rabbi Meir. They both come from the same word, which means to light up. Meir in Lashon HaKodesh means to light up. And Nehirai is Aramaic for lighting up. Either way, Rabbi Nehirai says, "Hevigolelim kain Torah, one should exile himself to a place of Torah. He should make sure that he lives in a location which has Torah in it. There are righteous people around who are knowledgeable in Torah. There's a Torah community. There's a yeshiva in the town. Ideally, that is where one should live, in order that his home will also be a home where their primary focus is Torah, and that is the biggest value, and that is what fills up one's life. And don't say that the Torah will come after you, you'll stay in your town where there isn't a lot of Torah there. Because eventually people will come to that town who do know Torah, and they'll come and teach you the Torah perhaps. And don't tell yourself that your friends will come and give over the Torah which they learnt to you. Your friends left to a place of Torah, and you're thinking to yourself, "Nah, it's alright, I don't need to go, they'll come back here and they'll teach me the Torah which they learnt." Don't say that, because firstly, it's greater that you learn the Torah from the source itself. And secondly, your entire life is changed and shaped by the location and community in which you live. And Rabbi Nahirari interestingly ends off the Mishnah with a posuk from Mishlei, "Ve'el binoscho al tisho'ein," and don't rely on your own understanding, your own wisdom, your own knowledge, your own intelligence. No, you require somebody who is greater than you to teach you Torah. So that's another reason to make sure that you are in a location, in a community, in an area where the people who populate that area are Talmid Chachomim. And there are people very knowledgeable of Torah there who are able to teach you. Mishnah Tesvot, Rabbi Yane Omer, Rabbi Yane says, "Ein biyodeinu lo mishalvas harasha'im." It is not in our hands, in our ability and capability to understand and comprehend fully the fact that many wicked people are calm and have an easier life. The aflemi yisrael tzadikim, and we can't even understand why tzadikim, righteous people, often have to suffer. The famous conundrum of tzadik v'ralei rosha v'tovloi, a tzadik, a righteous person who has a bad, difficult life, unlike wicked people who often have a very easy life. We can never in this world fully grasp why that is. Now, there are certainly partial answers which have been given. Hashem wants tzaddikim to suffer in this world so that they don't need to suffer as much in Gehenna in the next world. Whereas Rishayim, who value this world as being much more significant than the next world, so they receive all of their reward in this world. And it comes off the reward which they will receive for the few mitzvahs which they do have in the next world. However, part of the conundrum is the fact that not every tzaddik has lots of suffering. There are also tzaddikim who do have an easier life in this world. And there are rishoim who have a very difficult life in this world. So now, how are you going to answer that? Why does this tzaddik have an easy life and this tzaddik has a more difficult life? There's no rule that every tzaddik has like this and every rasha has like this. So why exactly this particular tzaddik does need to suffer is not understood by us. And why this particular Rasha has the better life in this world, we can't understand that. But because it's beyond our grasp, there's no point pondering the difficulty for extensive periods of time. Because in this world, we can't understand all of the ways of Hashem. And indeed, there is no need to. Alright, continues the Mishnah, Rabbi Masa ben Chorosh says, "Having makd mishlem kol adam, one should get there first, he should proceed in asking the welfare of other people. Whenever you see somebody, you should greet them, and this shows that you value them." The Gemara in Brachas famously says, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, nobody ever managed to greet him before he had greeted them, even non-Jews, he would greet with a smile. So that is a very high quality. It's an important quality which one should strive to attain. And Rav Masa ben Chorosh ends off, "V'hevi zonov la'aroyos," one should be a tail to lions, "V'alti reish la'shu'olim," and he shouldn't be the head of foxes. Meaning, you should make your company and your surroundings people who are all greater than you. And he's only saying despite the fact that you'll be the tail, but that's part of why this is good. You'll be the smallest among the people, so you'll always strive to be greater than you are already now. Those are the people you'll look to copy and to become similar to. And you shouldn't be the head of a group of people who are comparable to foxes, meaning you shouldn't make the people who are around you people who are lower down than you, and automatically you would be considered to be the greatest among them. Because it might make you feel a bit good, but it means that your personal level will go down. You'll start to accept certain things which people do as being ideal, even if they are not. And all the more so will you stop to strive to become greater. And therefore the best advice to become a greater person who constantly grows is to always hang around people who are indeed greater than you.